Hello and welcome back to Weathering the Storm, a podcast where we strive to weather the storms of life by placing and sustaining an unwavering faith in God. I'm your host, Drew Suttles, and today we are all the way up to episode 17, which is hard for me to believe that we only have four episodes left after this one today that will conclude season 9. But I'm thankful that we've been able to go on this journey together through the major prophets, especially after going through the minor prophets last season. So this is allowing us to study a lot of God's Word together, and again, very grateful for this opportunity to do so. We have gone through the book of Ezekiel, and today we're closing out our study there. And we've looked at chapters 1, 2, and 3. We've also studied from chapter 37 last week, the Valley of Dry Bones. But today will certainly be a unique study as we think about Ezekiel chapter 40, and really the content there all the way through chapter 48. As we think about this being a kind of an ending of the book, and I will go on record as saying that this can be very difficult to go through this verse by verse and to look at it. There's a lot of imagery, a lot of symbolic language here, but hopefully we can bring out some points here that can help us in our walk with the Lord and help us to weather the storm. Once again, this podcast, the Weathering the Storm podcast, is on the Scattered Abroad Network. We are a work of the Memphis School of Preaching and grateful to be on this network. Now we are in our fifth year of operation, which we're very grateful to God for allowing us to do this, and very grateful for your support, because your support, your encouragement, and by you listening and liking and sharing, subscribing, all those things are so important to us and to the health of this network, and we are very appreciative of that. And so I am certainly grateful to be here, be on this network, be able to record this podcast with you, and to be able to study the Bible. It's such a wonderful blessing. If you have your Bibles, I do invite you to Ezekiel chapter 40. I'm going to begin by reading this text, looking at the first few verses, and I want to highlight some thoughts with you here, and then we're going to just kind of give an overview of what is taking place in these eight chapters that kind of bring everything to a close, and that will also help us to close out our study of the book of Ezekiel. The Bible says, "In the 25th year of our captivity, at the beginning of the year, on the 10th day of the month, in the 14th year after the city was captured, on the very same day, the hand of the Lord was upon me, and he took me there." Now, there's a lot to break down there in verse 1. It tells us it's the 25th year of our captivity. Now, keep in mind, the captivity lasted for 70 years. And so they are nearing the midway point. Of course, 35 would have been that midway for them. And so they are almost three decades in to this captivity. It's the beginning of the year, the 10th day of the month, 14th year after the city was captured. Now, what's interesting is it says on the very same day. And so this is very interesting to consider, where Ezekiel was in the time in the fall of captivity of Judah. Some references for your notes: 2 Kings 25, 1 through 4. We have a reference there. And then Ezekiel 33 and verse 21, going back to when the city was captured, when it was taken. And so this gives us the time frame. This tells us what was happening. And then, of course, the phrase, "the hand of the Lord was upon me." We find this throughout Ezekiel. Ezekiel chapter 1 and verse 3, chapter 3 and verse 14, chapter 3 and verse 22. And also we noticed it in our last study of Ezekiel 37 and verse 1, "the hand of the Lord came upon me." So God is certainly with Ezekiel. He wants him to see these things. And here we have the visions that Ezekiel is going to see. That is crucial for us to understand. Of course, Hebrews chapter 1, verses 1 and 2 teach us that in times past, God did speak to the fathers by the prophets. He came to them in various ways and at various times. You know, one of those ways that he communicated truth was through dreams and visions. And we're going to study that, Lord willing, as we go to the book of Daniel. But certainly Ezekiel had visions as well from God. Ezekiel chapter 1 and verse 1. "The heavens were opened, and I saw visions of God." Chapter 3 and verse 14, "when the Spirit lifted me up and took me away." Chapter 8 and verse 3, "the Spirit lifted me up between earth and heaven and brought me in visions of God." And then again, referencing back to Genesis 37, This was a vision that he saw, being able to see the Valley of Dry Bones for himself. I mentioned Daniel chapter 7. Daniel had a dream and visions on his head while he was on his bed. That's verse 1. And then verse 7, he saw in the night visions. We'll see that throughout that study. But keep in mind, this is how God is communicating and revealing his truth at this point in time. And so Ezekiel says, in the visions of God, he took me into the land of Israel, and he set me on a very high mountain. On it toward the south was something like the structure of a city. He took me there, and behold, there was a man whose appearance was like the appearance of bronze. He had a line of flax and a measuring rod in his hand, and he stood in the gateway. And the man said to me, Son of man, look with your eyes and hear with your ears, and fix your mind on everything I show you, for you were brought here so that I might show them to you. Declare to the house of Israel everything you see. And there was a wall all around the outside of the temple, and in the man's hand was a measuring rod 6 cubits long, each being a cubit and a handbreadth. And he measured the width of the wall structure, 1 rod, and the height, 1 rod. That gives you an intro, if you will, into what we're about to find out as we work through this text together. And so in Ezekiel chapter 40, as we think about this being the Son of Man, again, that's a reference back to Ezekiel for how God is going to talk to him throughout this text. But I just want to highlight a few of these points with you. When he says he set me on a very high mountain, this is so much deeper than a physical mountain. So we've got to look beyond a physical structure of a mountain and think about this from a spiritual standpoint. For example, in Isaiah chapter 2, verses 2 and 3, it shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established on the top of the mountains, and it shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow to it. Well, we know from our study of Isaiah in the Old Testament, Isaiah is talking about the Lord's church. Now, the church of Christ, it's going to be established in the city of Jerusalem. You go into verse 3 of Isaiah 2. Many people shall come and say, come and let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob. He'll teach us his ways, we'll walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. And so the high mountain there is a reference to this spiritual plane that he is pointing to, the church that's going to be established. Ezekiel 17, on the mountain height of Israel, I will plant it. That's messianic. That's a prophecy pointing to Jesus and how he's going to connect that. Of course, we can study that in Isaiah 53. Ezekiel 20 and verse 40, for on my holy mountain, on the mountain height of Israel, there all the house of Israel, all them in the land shall serve me. Again, pointing to the messianic era, speaking of the church, spiritual Israel, Galatians 6:16. Micah chapter 4 and verse 1, it shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established on the top of the mountains and shall be exalted above the hills, and all people shall flow to it. So connect Isaiah 2 with Micah 4 and also this reference here in Ezekiel chapter 40. And no doubt, Revelation 21:10, he carried me away in the spirit to a great and high mountain and showed me the great city, the holy Jerusalem, descending out of heaven. And so when you see this phrase, set me on a very high mountain, the idea is he's setting him on a higher ground, a higher plane from a spiritual standpoint. And here he's able to see this vision, and he's looking forward to what he's going to see because he's going to go out and tell the people. Notice this man whose appearance was like the appearance of bronze. You know, we find that throughout the Bible of this idea of bronze. Daniel chapter 10 and verse 6, this idea of his eyes, torches of fire, his arms and feet like burnished bronze. What about Revelation 1:15, talking about the Son of God? His feet were like fine brass, as if refined in a furnace, and his voice is the sound of many waters. Some have even suggested that this would have been the second person of the Godhead here. But we do know that this is the vision that Ezekiel was seeing. And in verse 4, he says, Son of man, look with your eyes and hear with your ears. Fix your mind on everything that I show you. Fix your mind is literally, in the Hebrew language, set your heart. Set your heart. Set your affection. It reminds us of what we find in the New Testament. set your affection on things which are above, not on things of this earth. Colossians chapter 3, verses 1 and following. He says, I want you to look with your eyes, hear with your ears, set your heart on everything I show you, for you are brought here for this reason. I want you to see it, and then I want you to declare to the house of Israel everything that you see. Later in Ezekiel 43 and verse 10, he says, Son of man, describe the temple to the house of Israel, that they may be ashamed of their iniquities, and let them measure the pattern. Notice he says again, describe the temple to the house of Israel. He wants him to see it, and he wants him to describe what he is seeing. So keep in mind that this is symbolic. This is not a literal structure. Some have tried to push that and promote that. But from a spiritual standpoint, Ezekiel's seeing a new city. He's seeing a new temple. And I want to suggest to you that he's looking forward to the Messianic era, talking about the Lord's church. To work through this, you'll notice in verses 6 through 16, you have the eastern gateway of the temple. Verses 17 through 19, the outer court. 20 through 23, the northern gateway. 24 through 27 is the southern gateway. And then you have gateways of the inner court. You have where sacrifices were prepared, the chambers for singers and priests, the dimensions of the inner court. You come into chapter 41, the dimensions of the sanctuary, the dimensions of the design of the temple area. In 42, the chambers for the priests, the outer dimensions. And then chapter 43, the temple, you know, speaking about the Lord's dwelling place. Well, we know from the New Testament that Christians are the temple of God. That is where God dwells. He dwells in the Christian. 1 Corinthians 6, 19 and 20. Keep us in check with that. And so you work through all of this, and it's just emphasizing what's going to take place, whether it's the feasts that are happening in chapter 46, the manner of worship that is to take place, how the offerings were to be prepared. In 47, the healing waters, the borders of the land. And then chapter 8, the division of the land. And then it closes out with the gates of the city and its name. And I love the way this ends in verse 35. The very last verse of the book of Ezekiel. All the way around shall be 18,000 cubits, and the name of the city from that day shall be The Lord Is There. I've often told people the greatest thing about heaven is that God's going to be there. And the worst thing about hell is that God won't be there. And so he goes through all of this detail to show that God is a God of order. God is a God of pattern. But ultimately, this place is going to be where the Lord is. The Lord is there. And no doubt the Lord dwells in his church today. You know, Jesus made that great statement, I will never leave you nor forsake you, Hebrews 13, 5 and 6. Lo, I'm with you always, even to the end of the world. Talking about those who are doing his will, those that are his people. And so in Ezekiel 40 through 48, again, there's a lot to navigate through. I will not fight you on that. I know that it is a lot. But ultimately, it's to point to the Lord's church. It's a way that we can weather the storm. And certainly Ezekiel could, because now you have the Messianic age considered in a vision. Now there's the hope that we are going to leave captivity and we are going to go to this place. Ultimately, speaking about the church. So what temple is this? Well, it's not Solomon's temple. It's not Zerubbabel's temple, which was much smaller. It's not the so-called millennial temple. There's not going to be a millennial reign of Christ upon the earth. It's not a literal temple. You know, are there a literal river of water flowing from the threshold? No. The sacrifices of animals reinstated? No. Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 12 teaches us that the blood of bulls and goats can never take away sin. But this man, after he had offered one sacrifice for sins forever, sat down at the right hand of God. So we know that's not the case. Will circumcision be enjoyed? No. Levites officiating? No. Levitical priesthood is no more. Jesus came from a different tribe anyway. He came from the tribe of Judah. And he's our great high priest today. So why the details? Why the details of Ezekiel 40 through 48? It's because God is a God of details. He's a God of pattern. But it was also to show the order of the church, to show the grandeur, the beauty of the church, to show the intricate preparation for the church. Ephesians chapter 3, verses 9 through 11, we alluded to a moment ago, reminds us that this is in the eternal purpose in mind of God for the church to be there. It was not a plan B. It was not an afterthought. And so Ezekiel prophesies this in 572 BC, 10th day of the month. Reminds us, and amazingly, to go back to the language of the Passover next to this chapter 12. But again, the high mountain of verse 2 takes us back to Isaiah chapter 2 and verse 3, because the messianic age is being considered. There is a highly figurative description of the temple and services in a vision, but it's all looking to the church. Not talking about a literal place, literal temple, but talking about the Lord's church. And you think about weathering the storm, it's a reminder that God's plan is always going to come through, and it's always going to be for the best. Wayne Jackson says, Ezekiel chapters 40 through 48 constitute a unit that concludes the book of Ezekiel. It is not an easy journey. A commentary of this nature designed for the average Christian student cannot linger at every phrase, attempting to decipher the symbolic code. Chapters 40 through 43 contain a description of the new temple, and a number of its characteristics simply do not fit a literal edifice. And I appreciate him saying that, because it reminds us it's not talking about a literal temple, a literal place, but a picture, a vision for Ezekiel to see, ultimately pointing to the Lord's church. Going back to Frank Chesser's book, and I want to close out with this, Ezekiel 40 through 48 joined the two previous chapters in forming a climactic, fitting unit to this great book, from the mind of God to the mind of Ezekiel. We think about the views worthy of contemplation. He says one view is a symbolic depiction of the return of the spiritual remnant of Israel to Canaan, with its rebuilt city of Jerusalem, temple, and homes, enjoying the presence of God and promised blessings from his bountiful hand. And certainly this is, you know, worthy of consideration. But in a deeper sense, it looks even deeper to the Lord's church being established and all nations being able to flow into it. And I believe that's the important aspect of what we're studying. He also says chapters 40 through 43 opens the door to the immeasurable significance of the worship of the church, the spiritual temple of God, governed by the law of God, whose participants are Christians, a royal priesthood, 1 Peter 2:9, engaged in spirit and in truth worship, John 4:24. And so I love the way that Brother Chesser writes, number one, but I love the way he kind of concludes everything that we have been studying here as we think about Ezekiel 40 through 48. He says, every need of the righteous residue of Israel concerning the end of their captivity and the rebirth of their national life in Canaan had been abundantly supplied. Their minds were replete with incessant, reassuring emphasis upon this vital truth. Consequently, God closes this book with a 9-chapter unit that served their minds from a physical, that severed their minds from a physical land, physical blessings, and a physical temple, to the coming culmination of the redemptive work of Christ in the spiritual construction of the real temple, a spiritual temple foreordained from eternity, the church that Jesus said, I will build, Matthew 16:18, the product of the gospel preached and obeyed, Acts 2, a spiritual city where the Lord is there, Ezekiel 48:35, that at time's end will become the possession of God the Father, 1 Corinthians 15:24. And with those thoughts in mind, we consider how we can weather the storm, knowing that God keeps his promises. And what a blessing it is to be a member of the Lord's church. Well, I want to thank you so much for listening today, and I'm thankful that we've been able to spend this time in the book of Ezekiel. Certainly, there's a lot more that we could discuss and study together, but I hope and pray that these four episodes going through the book and highlighting some of these passages will help us. Will help us to have a greater dependence and a greater love and appreciation for our God, for his power, for his promises, and certainly for the joy that we can have to be his children and be members of the church that his son purchased with his own blood. Next week, we will begin our final series in this season as we begin a study of the book of Daniel. We'll be in Daniel chapter 1, and so I want to encourage you to go ahead and read ahead and be prepared for that. Really excited to study the book of Daniel with you and to close out another season of Weathering the Storm. Thank you so much for listening today, and may God bless you.